On the Same Page, A Good Omens Fan Fiction by Chekhov, read by Gorilla's Gal 86. Part 3. Chapter 4. The idyllic morning, the awkward, shy breakfast, the discussion of what had happened last night never came. Instead, there was a phone call at 6:32 a.m. when it was still dark outside, and Aziraphale had to roll out of bed and grope around on the floor for his flip phone. "Aziraphale, it's Gabriel. Father died last night." He listened in stunned silence as the man on the other end of the line, whose voice he hadn't heard for years, relayed the details of the upcoming funeral. There were discussions of business, of preparations, some sort of will, a ceremony. All of this was relayed in a single monologue which seemed to exist under the correct assumption that it would not be interrupted even once. The underlining meaning was clear. Aziraphale was expected to come back. "Requiem Mass is in 3 days. Afterwards we'll have a reception. We were hoping you'd write something. You always did have a way with words." A lump had taken a permanent residence in Aziraphale's throat. It had nothing to do with grief, much as he tried to feel it for proprietary's sake. "We can discuss the details when you arrive. I have to go now. There are preparations." And then the line went dead. He sat still for a long time, there on the edge of the bed, staring blankly at the wall. Finally, the bedsheet stirred, and a weight scooted up the mattress behind him. A hand slid up his back, warm, comforting. He fought the urge to flinch from it. "Something happen?" Crowley asked, voice sticky with sleep.
"Who was that?"
"It was..." Aziraphale opened his mouth and closed it again uselessly, organizing files into folders over and over again inside his head, trying to find some semblance of logic in the whirlwind of empty emotions that did not belong to the death of a parental figure. Sadness, because it felt like he had lost something, though he couldn't for the life of his think what. Fear, because he realized he was apparently unexcommunicated. Relief, because at least they didn't completely hate him. Just when he'd got over it, too. Horrible timing, really. "My father died," he said. Crowley was silent, and yet, somehow, Aziraphale could hear the frown. He took a deep breath to steady himself. It didn't work. "It was Gabriel, one of my relatives. They want me to come back to the estate to help prepare for the funeral." "I thought you cut contact with your family," Crowley said quietly. "I did." Even to himself, Aziraphale's voice sounded very small. The truth was more complex. It was kind of Crowley to put the control into his hands, as if he'd been the one to make the choice. Made him feel less weak, if even for a moment. "Are you going to go?" Aziraphale swallowed, or tried to. He got halfway through, realized his eyes were stinging, and redirected his efforts to blinking very hard instead.
I ought to."
He stood up, reached for the place on the chair where his clothes lay folded, and began to dress himself with shaking hands.
"I can drive you."
Foley said. Aziraphale refused to look at him.
No, no, don't be ridiculous. It's up north, it'll take hours. Maybe the airport. Yes.
He buttoned himself up, leaned down to grab his tie and then his socks, and then waistcoat. Things he'd discarded last night, pieces of armor he'd shed without a second thought as they'd stepped into the bedroom, entangled in each other. Putting them back on again, one by one, seemed to make each of his limbs heavier. He clutched his coat in his arms, gathered pieces of himself from the wreck-scattered corners of his mind, and headed for the door, catching his hand on the corner of it and hesitating for just a second. He wanted to look back. Instead, he just stared out silently into the hallway.
"You don't have to do this," said Crowley from the bed. "They don't deserve it, after what they did to you."
Aziraphale didn't reply. He squeezed the doorframe so hard he thought the wood might splinter, and then let go and pushed away. "Thank you," he said, and left. Father was a loose term. Fatherhood was an even looser state of being for the individual involved. Aziraphale's biological parents had died in a traffic accident when he was a few months old, and he felt as connected to them, or the idea of them, as he did to the concept of having an appendix. When questioned, he would admit that reasonably, at some point, they would have to have existed. But he didn't miss them, and their function in his life could largely be summarized by their removal from it. He had been raised in the church. Well, it was more like a family or a community, an estate that had roots in the clergy going back several decades, and he, by some distant blood association, was one of their heirs. There were many like him, although he was certainly nothing like them. Old blood, old money, and old religion were the guiding pillars of each movement of the ancient lineage of the household. He had been brought up by stuffy tutors and distant nannies and kind priests. And yes, in a way, he supposed Father did also have a hand in his upbringing. Then again, Father had a hand in everything. That was rather the point of old money. Of course, the hand itself had not really done anything through the years. At first, it was just an unreachable object, a thing Aziraphale spied in mass when he was young enough to have to look up at it and wonder if he might hold it. Eventually, it was a thing he could see through the keyhole of the east wing study, resting on the wooden desk, scribbling away at some contracts. Through the years, it became less of something he actively saw, but rather something he felt in spirit. It was on his back, urging him on in his religious studies. It was on his shoulder, gripping him with a chokehold when he first began to have doubts. And then, it picked up a metaphorical sword and held it over his neck, making a quiet, solemn sort of threat. It had made good on the threat. Aziraphale arrived in the afternoon. He was still dressed in the clothes he'd put on that morning, still smelled of Crowley's body wash, still felt peppered with the red teeth marks hidden safely underneath his button-up. And much as he wished he could revel in the feeling and not let his old thinking get to him, he could not help feeling the fingerprints on his skin burnt like taint as he set foot in the old house for the first time in over 7 years. The floor was polished white, the curtains were pristine, cream-colored. The staircase leading up to the second floor landing was a shining ivory. He was a splatter,
a stain on its perfectly curated canvas, as he always had been. "Aziraphale," a voice called from the top of the stairs. He looked up, spotting Gabriel. Much like the house, the man had somehow remained unchanged since the last time they'd met, many years ago. His face was sculpted into a picturesque smile, as if he was part of the decorum. How did they even know about him? How did they get his number? He had thought they'd stricken him from the records, burned every bridge. He thought he was as good as dead to them, since he'd been forcibly removed from the estate. Questions, endless questions burned on his tongue as he gazed up at the man descending to meet him with an easygoing, bouncing gait. He voiced none of them. "We're so glad you could make it," Gabriel said. "We have a lot to catch up on." Aziraphale swallowed back his questions. He had to trust that the answers would be revealed to him in due time. For now, the situation seemed, for lack of a better word, ineffable. "Feel better?" Gabriel asked as soon as Aziraphale stepped into the study. "I'm awfully sorry for summoning you on such short notice. I had no idea book dealing was such a rough business," Gabriel admitted, and it was difficult to tell whether his voice was mocking or teasing. Perhaps it was trying for one and failing into the other. "Having to sleep in hotels just to close a deal, it sounds absolutely dreadful if you ask me." "Yes, thank you," Aziraphale said automatically, tugging up his collar once again. He wasn't sure how good Gabriel was at detecting lies, but he knew he didn't have a problem with his sight, and Crowley had left a few visible marks. He had noticed them in the bathroom mirror and felt his stomach flip at the memory of the mouth that had left them there. "And thank you for the change of clothes and letting me use the shower." "It's technically your shower as much as it is mine," Gabriel replied and reached over to clap him on the shoulder. The contact startled them both, and they leaned away in an uncomfortable silence. "I'm afraid I have to disagree," Aziraphale said, finally not looking up. "You mustn't think that you have to be kind to me. I know full well what my standing is in this family." "Your standing is fine." Another silence, this one more stunned than uncomfortable. "I'm afraid I don't understand," Aziraphale admitted. Clasping his hands together, the other man began to pace, slowly, deliberately, towards the old wooden desk by the window. "Aziraphale, listen. What happened with Father and his decision to remove you from the house? You have to understand, times change. He did what he felt was best for us at the time, but the past is in the past. And like it or not, his passing harkens a new era." A hurricane of emotions was brewing inside Aziraphale's chest, its long, tendril arms spreading out to the rest of his limbs, making him feel light and full of electricity. He could hear thunder pounding in his ears. His head, the only thing miraculously, terrifyingly calm, was the eye of the storm. "Gabriel," he said, shocked by how level his own voice sounded. "I'm not sure what exactly you mean by all this, but nothing has changed. I'm still gay." Gabriel winced visibly, but then seemed to steel himself and look at Aziraphale. "That's much less of an issue these days." Aziraphale lifted his eyebrows and said nothing. "What I mean is, I've had a talk with the others," Gabriel explained, fluttering his hand in a vague gesture. "Michael, Uriel, Sandalphon, the rest. And they all agreed that There's no reason you shouldn't be allowed to come back.
He paused, waiting a beat for a groveling, thankful reply, and when he got none, continued onward.
Look, I'll be honest with you. Father's left things in a bit of a mess, and we're doing our best to clean it up and take the machine back to the shop, so to speak. This is part of it.
Aziraphale, you are, and always have been, an asset to this family.
An asset, echoed Aziraphale numbly, feeling his lips purse and his eyebrows make a bid for the heavens.
Your translation work was always unmatched. Your extensive background in linguistics, your knowledge of literature, and your writing. Those are all things people should be judging you by.
Not whoever it is you're attracted to. Frankly, we could care less about that.
Oh. Aziraphale fought back a flurry of conflicting emotions and biting retorts.
Well, that's very kind of you, but...
The point is, interrupted Gabriel, we are a family, and family should stick together. We are aware of how hard things have been for you, and we want to mend the bridges Father burned. I'm sure he did his best under the circumstances, but now that chapter is behind us. We're going to build anew. We're going to do better.
Aziraphale struggled for something to say that wasn't a swear.
So, Gabriel beamed up another smile. About that reception speech.
It was a long funeral mass.
Of course, they were all long, as per tradition. But Aziraphale felt it even more acutely that day than any other. The cut of his suit was practically stifling. Perhaps it was unavoidable. Gabriel had it delivered to him at a quick turnaround. The measurements must have been slightly off. But no, the suit was the least of his worries. He was trapped in this church as much as he was in the suit. He was trapped in his role as much as he was in the church. The swirling smog of scents that accosted him from all sides. Incense, human sweat, old wood. The stiff shoulders lining the pews stretching out before him. He'd chosen one of the seats closer to the aisle, always one foot out the door, always ready to bolt. It was odd. Maybe it was the light filtering in from the chancel windows, or maybe it was the nostalgia. But the entire thing had an odd sepia quality to it. Was he in the past or the present? He had known this church, walked these halls. His fingers remembered the feeling of the ridges on the altar. He could close his eyes and trace the outline of the scorch marks that stained the floor on the left transept, where one of the choir boys, Mark, wasn't it Mark? Had dropped a candle once. From the front, the priest's voice echoed softly through the pews. Aziraphale could have pretended to be listening to the reading, but he didn't bother. He knew the lines. He knew the written word. He knew its interpretations. What he didn't know was what he was doing here. Old things. Rebirth. Atonement. He stared silently down at his clasped hands, worrying his right thumb over the knuckle of his left hand over and over and over again in gentle spirals. He looked unseeing at his knees, pictured the skin beneath his hands that was not his own. He braided his fingers into each other and imagined hair, dark red, slightly curled. He tightened his grip into a fist and thought he could almost hear the softest, melodic groan lacing through the monotony of the verse. His lips stung where he could still recall cruelly kissing him, open-mouthed and open-hearted and eager and wanting, fully surrendering to him right there on the bed, no questions asked.
utter devotion, trust, control, eagerly given up, offered to him like a gift, a new beginning. He flinched when the people began to stir around him and blinked out of his daze. Right, the readings were over. Holy Communion was next. He sighed and tried to forget the taste of skin against his tongue. There was a message from Crowley. "You okay?" He was trying to think of an answer. What was defined as okay? What was the standard against which he could measure it? What sort of average amount of anxiety and stress and vomit-inducing nausea was permitted before the scales tipped into the negative? How much did a standard person suffer, all while gritting their teeth into a grin and choking out insistently, "I'm fine, it's fine, I'm fine"? How much was Aziraphale allowed to not be okay? He was in a bed, in a room, not his room, though it technically used to be. And then for a while it wasn't. And now, apparently, it was. Again. He was warm. He had food and shelter. He had money. He had money. The will. He was in the will. He had inheritance. He had a spot at the table. A space in the family. A part in the estate. How was any of it supposed to be not okay? If he wasn't able to define his situation as okay, then what could he define as okay? How much would it take? Were any of them really okay? Was Crowley okay? Was he in bed? Was he awake? Was he out on the town finding someone else to spend the night with? Had he already forgotten about his ear fail? He stared at the phone for a long time, thinking the way the chat window would look reflected back on Crowley's ultra-modern, sleek back square of a screen. Red, 3:49 a.m. "This is really good," said Gabriel, smacking the stack of papers with the back of his hand demonstratively. "I mean, I work in publishing, and I gotta tell you, it's got potential. Not like that dastardly, indecent romantic fiction nonsense they're putting out these days. You write a lot of stuff like this?" Aziraphale changed his full-body wince into a shrug at the last second. "It's just something I've been doing in my free time, when I'm not managing the bookshop." "I see," Gabriel said. He glanced up and pushed the cup of coffee towards Aziraphale on the counter. "Drink. You look like death warmed over. Did you get any shut-eye last night?" "I'm afraid I have trouble sleeping. Always have," said Aziraphale, dragging the cup to his side and picking it up. More so for the comfort of the weight in his hands than for the smell or taste of the black brew. He rarely had coffee, but it didn't feel right to put up a fuss about preferences. "I'll tell you what," said Gabriel. "Let me run it past some people. I think I can use this." The coffee touched his lips and warmed them, but went no further. He voiced, hoping that it sounded neutral. "Some editing will be in order, of course," Gabriel grinned broadly. "But if you're interested, I think we can take this up with the magazine Michael runs. They'd love you there." He paused to pick up his own thermos, took a gulp, grimaced, and then slapped the stack of papers on the counter. "You got any more like this?"
"Oh, sure," said Aziraphale timidly. "But it's nothing much, really. You don't have to feel obligated to read it just because..."
"Nonsense," boomed Gabriel. "That's what family is for." If he had to look back on the specifics of what happened after that,
Aziraphale would say that it took years. Realistically, it hadn't, but it did take years off of his life. It certainly felt like years from the amount of rapid-fire events that cascaded down the line like a chain of dominoes, all falling one after another in rapid succession. When had Gabriel become his editor? He didn't know. When had his short stories began to be published in the Catholic periodical some distant relatives owned? He had no idea. When had they demanded a full-length book from him? Not a clue. But regardless of the fact that he could hardly keep track of it, it had, in fact, happened. It happened so much and so fast that often Aziraphale would lock himself up in the shop and not open it for a whole week, instead choosing to sit on the sofa with paper strewn among him and alternate between drinking and rewriting and drinking and editing and rewriting and writing. And before he knew it, 6 months had passed. The idea of seeing Crowley again never disappeared from his mind. Not truly ever, not even for a day. He held the thought of him in the back of his head when he woke up, when he was shelving books, when he was penning dialogue. Suppressing it, pushing it aside became second nature to breathing. On particularly dark nights, he would shut himself up in his back room and think about calling. He would think about hearing the other's voice on the other end of the line when he picked up the phone, about seeing him on the streets on accident and their eyes meeting and something wonderful and magical happening, and all the barriers between them falling away. But contradicting these impossible daydreams, in reality he had actually made it very difficult for any of these things to come to fruition. For one thing, he rarely went outside, busy as he was with new writing ventures. For another, he barely had the courage to answer any of Crowley's messages, save for a few short, very meek responses. He was simultaneously terrified that the other hated him already, and conscious of the fact that if he didn't, surely this style of communication would be more than sufficient to do the job. And sure enough, as winter turned into spring, Crowley's emails became more and more sparse, and Aziraphale's refusal to pick up the ringing phone, paralyzed as he was with his own indecision, only served to ascertain his isolation. It was late April when it finally happened. He was returning home from a trip to the supermarket with a bag full of groceries, and he had just hip-checked his way through the door. The sign on the front was set the same as it had been for the past several weeks, closed. And he didn't even bother locking anything as he shuffled into the kitchen to exchange his rotten avocados for some fresh ones, vehemently promising them they would not be meeting the same fate. And then the bell above the door chimed. He rushed back downstairs, horrified at the thought of having to actually drive customers away for the first time in ages. He was rather out of practice in both aspects of human interaction and bookshop anti-purchase bullying. And instead, felt his feet freeze to the floor at the sight of a shock of red hair and sunglasses. Crowley stood there for a few moments, staring back at him, and then let go of the door, making the bell chime again as it shut. "Hey," he said. His voice sounded strange, nasal, like maybe he had a cold. "Oh," said Aziraphale, who suddenly sounded very nasal himself. His throat was closing and the train of all possible speech about to depart from the next station. "Mind if I come in?"
"Yes,"
Aziraphale managed to choke out. Crowley's eyebrows hid behind his glasses. "Yes, you do mind?"
"No,"
corrected Aziraphale hurriedly and stepped closer without thinking. Crowley mirrored him
and he seemed to be reaching out, and then Aziraphale was reaching as well. And his face lit up, and there was only a few feet between them suddenly, and oh no. There were too many details to consider before they could allow this to happen. He knew enough to guess where this was going. He knew about Newtonian laws. Any object in motion will remain in motion, unless it's acted upon by a greater force. "How about a walk?" Aziraphale exclaimed, rocking back on his heels and forcing himself to look away abruptly. "I was thinking of heading to St. James's to feed the ducks. Just bought some bread, and if you'd like to join me, I know we have a lot to catch up on." All at once, something had shifted. It was like the whole planet had tilted imperceptibly on its axis. Truth be told, Aziraphale wanted nothing more than to keep going towards certain collision. But they missed each other by inches. Two celestial objects brushing their gravitational pulls and arching away again in a slingshot effect. Crowley had once described to him over an astronomical spiel during a very drunken 4-hour phone lecture on theoretical interstellar travel. The distance between them grew. The universe was, after all, expanding. There was no way to tell if they were going to stay in each other's orbit, or if the repelling force had been too great to create a proper loop. Crowley's face fell a bit, but then he seemed to consider something and untensed. "Right," he said slowly, nodding. "Sure, whatever you want." "Oh, good," Aziraphale choked out cheerfully. "Yeah, good," agreed Crowley slowly. "Excellent. Great." It wasn't, by any stretch of the word. But it was a start. "I saw you got published." Aziraphale tugged off a piece of bread, pressing the pads of his fingers around the spongy surface, forcing it into a harder shape. "Oh, yes," he said lightly, looking down. "I suppose that did happen. Gabriel pulled a few strings and..." "One of your cousins?" "Mm-hmm." They were quiet for a while, standing there side by side. The stream murmured somewhere beneath them. Birds chattered in the canopy of trees just across the way, providing a pleasant filling of white noise to distract from the suddenly frequent awkward silences that peppered the conversation. "How's things with them?" asked Crowley again. "Better," allowed Aziraphale. He pressed the bread into a ball and dug his nails into the crust. "Strangely enough," he added, "now that my father is gone, they seem to have no issue with my little problem." He could almost feel Crowley turning his head to look at him, but did not allow himself to move and meet his gaze. There was no point. All he could see is the judgmental dark glass of Crowley's lenses. He didn't want to see his own insecurities reflected back at him. He cleared his throat. "Either way, they said they'd work things out with the lawyers. The will it's rather flexible to interpretation. They want to work out an agreement. Give me a portion." Crowley hummed. "A lot of money, is it?" he asked. "Oh, it's not about the money," Aziraphale said. He looked across the water at the ducks waiting there and tossed a smushed piece of bread out to them. They seemed to give it judging looks, but ate it all the same. He sympathized. "Well, you might think me rather silly, but it's the library I'm really after. Before I was exiled, I'd been entrusted quite the collection that my father kept. I was meant to inherit it, you see, but the whole thing that followed meant I wasn't able to take much of it with me, aside from what I have in the shop, but that's actually merely a fraction." He began to tear off another piece of bread. "I was hoping to persuade Gabriel to entrust it to me."
And did he agree?
He did, admitted Aziraphale, albeit on some conditions.
Beside him, Crowley sucked in a breath through his teeth, which sounded like a hiss. They want you to come back to the church. Shocking himself, Aziraphale gave a barking laugh.
Goodness, no. I'm not going to do that, even if they want me to, he said.
A glance to the side. Crowley's shoulders were drooping in relief. He looked back at the water.
It's about the publishing agency Gabriel owns. He said they like my work. Wants me to continue sending them stories.
Crowley snorted beside him.
And? You're gonna do it?
Aziraphale threw the bread again. A duck caught it in midair, bobbing its long neck to choke the morsel down while the others stared in jealousy.
Yes, I think I will. It's been quite busy with how much they're wanting me to do, but I've had a few things on the back burner for years now. Besides, it seems to be a reasonable arrangement.
He could hear another shrug in Crowley's tone of voice, cresting in his gentle tenor.
Guess I can see why you would. Good for you. They're lucky to have you.
A warm burst of gratitude flared to life in Aziraphale's chest.
Thank you, he said. But I'm not sure how suited I really am in the long run. They mostly want me for my spiritual work, you see, and it's been a long time since I've written anything in that field. In fact, the things I'm sending them now are about a decade old, from the time I was doing some soul-searching. I'm reworking it, of course, to be a bit more palatable to the intended audience.
Which is?
Mostly older folk looking to rekindle their faith.
So you're making it more straight, said Crowley with a knowing snort.
That too, said Aziraphale. He sighed wistfully. Oh well, it's not as if it matters. It's far less personal to me now. I'm just glad to put it to some use. It wasn't doing anyone any good collecting dust on my hard drive.
Crowley sniffed again and reached over to grab some bread from Aziraphale. For a moment, the hand brushed his jacket, and even that simple amount of contact sent his heart into a fluttering frenzy. But Crowley didn't seem to notice. He just leaned onto the railing and began to flick tiny pieces of crust into the water.
I say you milk it for all it's worth. Even if it's not money you're after, you may as well get your fair share.
To tell the truth, I've been working with Bays, you know, that one asshole I mentioned, more these past few months. That's why I didn't email as much. I'm sorry about that, by the way. I've just been damn busy. They want me to do a whole bloody book, a collection of short stories.
Aziraphale blinked and then smiled.
Oh, that's wonderful. Something about the fact that Crowley didn't hold him responsible for the lack of contact made him breathe a little easier.
Actually, I'm putting together a book for Gabriel as well.
Small world, said Crowley. He flicked some more bread toward, or maybe at, the ducks and then spun around and cocked a grin directly at Aziraphale. Works out perfectly, doesn't it? We can help each other out, like the good old days. It was difficult to resume brain function under direct assault of Crowley's beaming expression, but Aziraphale tried his best.
Sorry, what?
I mean, Crowley shrugged. His LED-powered smile grew less intense and he tilted his head away, to the sky, as if searching for some sort of inspiration there.
You know, if you need me to fill out some fluff for you. And I might ask you for some help with my raunchy scenes.
The realization dawned on him all at once.
No, protested Aziraphale immediately. Absolutely not.
Crowley looked back at him. In the reflection of his sunglasses, a tiny Aziraphale was fuming back at himself.
You cannot possibly think.
Why not? Interrupted Crowley, pushing away from the railing and facing the other fully now. His hands had gone into his pockets as much as they could, which wasn't much, and it made his shoulders right up and his elbows flare like he was a cobra. We've done well with collaborations up until now. That was for fanfiction, protested Azir Fail, and then looked around nervously and lowered his voice. Crowley, this is serious. There are laws. This is the real world. Doesn't change much if you ask me. That's precisely why I didn't ask, Azir Fail said. Ignoring the insulted way Crowley rocked back on his heels, he kept going. Listen, you might be comfortable skirting the law, but this could have repercussions for both of us. Writers collaborate all the time, protested Crowley. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with it is it's... Xerfield closed his eyes, searched for the words. Crowley, you're already famous, and famous for you know what. People know your name. Can you imagine what Gabriel would say if he knew? He doesn't have to know. Crowley spread his arms wide. We'll do it in secret, just like we've been doing. No. Snapped his ear fail and looked around again for good measure. I cannot believe you would even suggest no. But it could end in disaster for both of us. Azir Fail? Absolutely not. Crumpling the bag of bread in his hands, Azir Fail turned on his heel. Cutting himself off from the desperate expression he was directly in the path of. He had hoped that not looking at Crowley would make it easier, but he could practically feel the other staring at his back, and it only made him want to turn around. Taking a deep breath, he steeled his shoulders. I have a story to finish. Good day. From behind him, Crowley managed to combine a groan and growl into a single, utterly frustrated noise shoved out of the back of his throat. Fine. Have fun brewing your chicken soup for the soul. It shouldn't have been so difficult to walk away, but it was. He reckoned it was going to be the most difficult thing he would have to do all month. He was wrong, of course. The phone rang merely 2 days later. This time Azir Fail picked it up because he was stupid and hopeful and far more lonely than he was ready to admit. Look, Crowley said before he'd even managed to squeeze AZ Fells past his teeth. I know we left on the wrong note, just hear me out. Azir Fail took a deep breath, the old telephone receiver rattling in his hands from nervousness. The apology he'd lodged behind his cheek, the one he'd been gnawing this entire time like a particularly determined and absolutely incapable nutcracker, rolled into the back of his throat instead and stuck there. Crowley took his silence as a good sign. I'm not looking for a collaboration. Forget that idea. Pretend it never happened. I just need someone to proofread my stuff before I send it to Bees. They chewed me out last time as is. You've always been better with this stuff. Just look it over for me, all right? Just want your professional opinion. Azir Fail swallowed thickly. You're so stubborn, he thought to himself with utter fondness. Thank God you called. I wanted you to call. But he said none of it. Azir Fail? Said Crowley. His voice seemed to be infused with just the gentlest vibrato, as if he was bracing for a rejection. Yes, Azir Fail blurted out quickly. Yes, of course. I'm sorry. I just... He took another breath and let it out to steady himself, gripped the desk and closed his eyes, willing his tone to become more casual. If it's just a beta, a proofread you need, of course, I'll do it. Send it over. Crowley's breath crackled over the line. Was it relieved? Annoyed?
it was difficult to tell.
Right, he said, and at least the tremor from before was gone.
Thanks. Much appreciated.
Anytime. Standing there in the bookshop, blanketed with dim yellow lights and blocked in by towering bookshelves, Zierfail felt as though he could close his eyes and imagine the other next to him. Close. Close enough to feel Crowley's breath on his neck. He twisted the phone cord around his fingers, once, twice, winding it into a steely grip, picturing Crowley's half-coils cascading over his shoulders, just like they had in the photo. He opened his eyes, and he was back in the shop. No Crowley.
Well, said the Crowley that wasn't there, I guess I'll see you around then.
Yes, came the reply, though he didn't even recall thinking of making it.
Certainly.
A few more noises of relative contentment crawled through the receiver into his ear, and then the man mumbled something to the effect of ciao, and hung up. They still hadn't talked about that night, not even once, hadn't even hinted at it. Had it even happened? He was sure it had. But now it felt so far off. Buried beneath unpleasant memories of Gabriel and the family estate, that he wondered for a moment if it had merely been a dream. He had thought that the first time he held the book in his hands, he would feel proud, excited, maybe nervous, sure. But there was something of a cold dread that accosted him. He felt like he was holding a brick.
What do you think? Asked Gabriel, clapping him on the back again.
Aziraphale didn't flinch away this time. Over the past 10 months, he'd gotten more or less used to it, had developed an instinct, learned to steel himself when the other was coming close.
Looks good. Tip-top, he said, flipping through.
It really did look very professional. Hardcover. The jacket was a matte navy blue, with soft letters raised in gold across the front. He paused on the inside flap, glancing at a photo, and recognizing with a start that it was him.
Where is this from?
He asked, turning wide eyes on his cousin, who waved him off as if it wasn't important.
Well, it's just something I had on file. Had them put it on so the readers can feel like they have a better connection to you.
This is practically 10 years old, protested Aziraphale, glancing back down.
It had been my vestment. People will get the wrong idea.
No, Aziraphale. People will get the right idea. Gabriel squeezed his shoulder in a way that was just a bit too tight.
Listen, I know we didn't talk about this, but you do realize that as you get more and more popular, you need to think about your image.
Now, I'm not suggesting we lie, but the fact of the matter is, this will help sales. People want to read books by someone they trust. And I'm not saying I want you to change your attire, but this?
He glanced down at the well-worn waistcoat and bow tie in a once-over that could have given him a nomination in at least one drag ball category.
This isn't exactly great for PR. Not for our lot.
But, his ear fail began.
Listen, Sunshine, you're good at writing. I trust you to do that. But I'm good at selling. So let me take care of that part of it. And adorable as you are to your stuffy bookstore customers, the truth is, your image is part of the book itself.
Gabriel snapped up his eyebrows and tightened his smile another notch.
We're selling the books, but we're also selling you. And that means making yourself more presentable, on the page and off of it.
He brushed some invisible crumbs off of Aziraphale's shoulder.
You get my drift, don't you?
Aziraphale's gaze dropped to the book. The photo from 10 years ago. He was smiling fakely into the camera, his mouth turned up, but his eyes remaining untouched by its expression. He was still hiding back then. He hadn't come out at that stage, not to anyone except himself.
I'm not saying any big changes, soothed Gabriel. Just for the author photo, at least. Maybe update your closet a bit. Aziraphale choked down a pained laugh. Update. It sounded so innocent. By the sound of it, they would be renovating so he could move back in. Simply speaking, he didn't have the fight left in him. He'd done the coming out thing once, and had left him with deep wounds, scars he still couldn't shake, like a veteran who was still haunted by the last war and wanted nothing to do with the new one. He recoiled from the idea of enlisting, closed the windows, drew the curtains, and pretended it wasn't happening. Sure, Gabriel hadn't specifically said he needed to hide his sexuality, but the implication was there. And as the letters from readers began to pour in, it became more and more clear what sort of audience he was writing for. These people, lovely as they were, would not want to listen to a gay, ex-Catholic book collector who wrote fan fiction in his free time. They wanted, needed, the Aziraphale he'd built himself up to be. Or rather, the Aziraphale Gabriel had built him up to be. Crowley, predictably enough, was furious on his behalf. That's bullshit. Aziraphale shushed him gently. I know, but... But nothing, protested the other, though he did take it down a notch and closed most of his mouth, continuing to rant out of the corner of it. Who bloody cares who you are, what you look like? They're reading a book. My audience has no idea who I am, and they still have a wank just the same. Aziraphale glanced over his shoulder cautiously. Will you keep it down? As if his nerves were contagious, Crowley succumbed to a similar check of their surroundings. They didn't have much to worry about. The theater was practically empty. He leaned in. Is this why you wanted to go to the later showing? I figured it might be easier to get lost in the crowd, but there's hardly any people here. Aziraphale sighed and edged down in his seat. Look, it's not ideal. I don't like it either, but Gabriel's correct about one thing. The audience has their image of me already. I can't exactly risk it now. We're already planning the next series of stories, and I'm getting more letters every day. I have a lot riding on this. Grumbling in accompaniment, Crowley muttered something that might have been the words, "Wish I was writing on this," as Aziraphale pretended not to have heard, grateful for the fact that the theater was dark enough to hide the red tinge on his cheeks. It was an old building, and the seats were small, meaning every once in a while, their shoulders would brush when Crowley leaned on the armrest. It was distracting enough as it was, without the other's comments. He knew he'd been foolish to accept the invitation, but it hadn't been the first time. If he wanted to stop himself now, he would also have to justify the past year or so of emails, proofreadings with light editing, and fine, just give it to me and I'll write it. And nights in his back room spent with a bottle of wine, which had been growing exponentially in frequency. Of course, there were limits. He told himself this, and he thoroughly believed it. Crowley, meanwhile, believed in testing those limits, pushing them. Every time a new line was drawn in the sand, he came in like a tide, erasing it, forcing it inland. Aziraphale always drew the next one, but it seemed there was just an unspoken agreement that some things were meant to be tested. He'd almost come to anticipate it by this point. It was just nature. Crowley's inexplicable need to question every single guideline thrown at him. It was something which Aziraphale respected about the other far too much to protest overtly. And yet... There was one line even Crowley had not yet crossed, or even so much as touched. It was never outlined explicitly, and in fact, Aziraphale had no memory of mentioning it at all. But unlike the others, It had been unquestionably left alone. Taking care to avoid moving his head, Aziraphale flickered his eyes to his left. In the low light of the movie screen, Crowley's profile glowed. The drop of his forehead, the edge of his nose, the stubborn jut of his jaw. His hair, which he'd been growing out again, much to Aziraphale's muted delight, now framed his face, sometimes hiding his ears, and more often hiding the tiny snake tattoo on his temple. He kept his sunglasses on. They were almost alone in the theater. There was an old man in the row parallel, but he appeared to be nodding off. A few more people down below them, 3 out of 5 on their phones. The young couple they'd spotted in the top row were almost guaranteed to be snogging now that the movie had properly started. Speaking of which, if Crowley were to reach out and touch his cheek, turn his face, lean in and slide his lips up against Aziraphale's mouth, who would notice them? But he didn't. Crowley hadn't so much as touched his hand since that fateful night over a year ago. They'd never discussed it, never mentioned it, never brought it up. Their distance remained cordially professional. Aside from the occasional tap on the arm or an inconsequential brush of their coats, Crowley acted like a magnet with mirroring charge, hovering just outside of Aziraphale's personal bubble. And it was torture, but Aziraphale knew better. "We shouldn't," he thought desperately again and again and again, at every single instinctual desire to grab the stupidly handsome man by the jacket and drag him in closer, and sink his fingers into his hair. He knew it would be a bad idea. "We shouldn't," he repeated, a mantra, a chant, a prayer to keep himself on that edge. "We can't," he told himself simultaneously, pulling excuses out of a hat like a magician. Because if they did, what would be next? A series of one-night stands? A serial case of secret dates? An endless spiral of hiding? Crowley was beautiful and sexy and charismatic. And if he were to try to take this somewhere, only a dead end awaited them. He couldn't very well give Crowley anything. Not a stable relationship, not a promise of any sort of openness, not any amount of public honesty. His entire life had been steeped in lies. He had spent the first half of it clawing his way from the clutches of organized religion, then the closet, and now he was crawling right back in. And he knew he wouldn't be able to come out again, not for a long time. And Crowley wouldn't want that sort of life. Crowley liked flashy displays and romantic recklessness. Crowley deserved more. More than a frumpy, closeted, chubby bookseller. He deserved a real relationship with someone as attractive as he was, to fulfill whatever fantasy he had that kept him writing all those wonderful, terrible, addictively trashy stories. Even if Aziraphale himself was selfish enough to think that the man might possibly want something, even if it was another hookup, surely Crowley didn't need to have him clinging like a deadweight, pretending they could be something, when clearly that was out of the question. He turned, and his breath caught as soon as he realized that Crowley was staring back, his expression unreadable from behind his dark glasses. His hand was half raised for some reason, as if poised to reach down between them. But as soon as he realized he was being watched, he jerked it back and tucked it hurriedly into his armpit. "What?" he asked, and his voice grated out more sharp and scratchy than usual. Aziraphale felt his throat closing up. "Nothing," he murmured, and turned away toward the screen, unseeing. It was nothing, he realized with a cold shudder. They had sex, once. That had been it. He was making it out to be more than it had been, That was all. Clearly, whatever it was Crowley was after, he'd got his fill and, perhaps, moved on. There was no definitive way to prove anything regarding how mutual the remaining gravitational well of attraction was without taking the necessary step beyond the event horizon of the black hole of his own feelings. And that was promised to be a disaster in terms of all possible outcomes. Whatever sexual tension lingered between them was perfectly manageable. Aziraphale had plenty of practice in that particular flavor of repression, thank goodness. "We won't," he thought. The words rang out in his head, a church bell tolling, the summoning, the promise, a new rosary. "I shouldn't, I can't, I won't." And so, for the next 5 years, he didn't. End of part 3.